Vectis Radio, FM 104.6, the heart of the island's community.
And a very, very good afternoon to you. It is now 5 minutes after midday on this Friday afternoon. You're listening to the final hour of this, the mid-morning show with me, Andy Knight, here on Vectis Radio, 104.6 FM across the island and online, of course, at vectisradio.com. Now, I'm particularly pleased and indeed delighted to welcome my guest for this afternoon's LSD, the Lunchtime Social Debate, into the studio. I'm joined today by the Isle of Wight's Member of Parliament, Mr. Bob Seeley. Very good afternoon, Bob.
Hello, Andy. How are you doing?
Very well. Well, indeed. Thank you so much for taking a big chunk out of your day, and I know how extraordinarily busy you are, but it's great that you've taken that opportunity to come in and speak on the island's community station, which is wonderful. And now it's just coming up to a year, of course, since you've been in office. Can you summarise the year in one word or a couple? I'll give you a couple.
It's been very hectic and incredibly rewarding, and I'm trying to do my best.
Well, obviously it must have been very hectic indeed, and talking to Rachel, your parliamentary assistant, just a moment ago before we came on air, and of course taking on board the new offices you've now got up at Northwood House, and hitting the ground running a year ago when you didn't actually have any base. I mean, it must have been extraordinary.
No, it was. We had to get things together very quickly indeed, and Rachel and in fact all my team have done a wonderful job, and I'm incredibly grateful for their support.
I'm sure. Now, I notice in your profile, Bob, that you call yourself a social media novice, and I think that's an interesting term, because I follow you indeed, as I know nearly 3,000 people do on Twitter, and you are very adept at the social media platform we know as Twitter, and it's great
now,
why
do you say that? Because to be honest, I didn't really go. I used to do a little bit of tweeting on my academic work.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
But I'd never, I was very wary about doing it as a member of parliament, so I was starting slowly. And I only really sort of got to grips with it earlier this year. So I still see myself as being very sort of inexperienced about how I use it. And I'm still trying to find out how I delineate between Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, for example.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that, I wouldn't have a clue either myself, to be perfectly honest. But having said that, I think that one of the keynotes of your first year in office, from my perspective, my own personal perspective, is your level of engagement, which I think, apart from the passion and the time and energy you put into the job you're doing for us, but the level of engagement and to tackle social media, as you yourself call it, as a novice, in the way that you have, I think it allows access to up to date what you're thinking and what's going on and what's happening in the world of politics as you see it, which I think is really important for those people who you represent here on the island.
Thank you.
No, I think that's a really important thing. So we wish you well with the.
By the way, am I allowed to plug my social media just for
of
people?
Of course you are. Please go ahead.
Okay, I always get it slightly the wrong way around. So let me see if I can remember it. My Twitter is IOW Bob Seeley. And on that, I talk about anything and everything. So a lot of that is national politics. Some of it is the foreign affairs stuff on the select committee. And then I'm on Instagram as well. And Instagram is almost more personal. So some of it's politics, but a lot of it is just posting lovely pictures of the island with, especially if I'm out and about at weekends, if I'm helping out at a fete or something, or, standing at the finishing line like I was doing last week for the Walk the White.
Of course.
So I'll take some snaps, really decent ones, and then sort of post something about my experiences. So it's more personal view of the job. And then the Facebook is very much island orientated, so that's where all the island stuff, the press releases go. So, for example, but there's an overlap between all three. So, but Twitter's obviously very short. The Instagram, I get to write a little bit longer, but then it's sort of very much focused on images. And Facebook is just right. This is what's happening, and it's just sort of very much island stuff.
But the Twitter is far more immediate, as you've described, and it does give the opportunity very succinctly to just.
But it's also getting a voice. So what I don't want to be is one of those people who say, "Today I did this." It's so boring.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to be chatty and personable, and trying to give my own opinions.
But I think that comes across, Bob. I mean, from the tweets, as I say, I'm one of your followers on Twitter, and I get that very sense that you are talking, to me, because it is very personalised. I think that's very clever. I mean, I think it comes across very well. Can I assume, Bob?
It's a work in progress. It will get better. But it is me that do it. I have been accused of having some great, massive sort of central media team that looks after no, I mean, occasionally my assistant, if I say, look, I'll do Instagram, can you post the material on Facebook?
Sure.
But actually, you know, what's the point of paying somebody, you know, the taxpayer pays, so it's not a great use of taxpayer money. What's the point of getting somebody to try to mimic your voice?
Exactly. So I mean, that's
my Twitter stuff is very much my own. My Instagram, sure. I tend to post almost like a diary at the end of the day.
Right.
Facebook, slightly less so, because I will just sometimes cut and paste the Twitter material onto Facebook, or the press release material will go on there as
of
well.
Of course.
You know, but
I think that's a really important point, and I'm glad you made it, that because people will, people being people, will inevitably assume, oh, of course, it's not Bob actually tweeting, but
no,
it is actually Bob tweeting.
Yeah, it absolutely. I do get some help occasionally with the press releases.
Yeah, of course.
Simply because if you're trying to talk to people, you either spend all your time talking to people, all your time, you know, there's a balance between being in the parliamentary chamber, taking part in debates, which always takes at least an hour out of your day, and then having lots of meetings, which one does, and, you know, dealing with constituent needs in the largest constituency in Britain.
Yes.
So there's a balance, but the Twitter stuff, the Instagram stuff, that is all my own, and Facebook is sometimes just cutting and pasting the press releases, so that could be a little bit more impersonable, because it's just, and, you know, clearly the website is a mix of everything.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, presumably people can track all these links and access them via your website, which of course is www.bobseely.org.uk.
That's the one.
And the links are all presumably from the website, should people need them.
They are. I'm just looking at it now.
I'm sure.
A couple of pictures are really quite old, and they were midwinter pictures, and they make me just...
get some
cold.
Summer ones.
I feel cold just looking.
You and a sun hat and some shorts, Bob.
No, I have changed my Twitter picture. I did change it quite regularly. The Twitter picture now on the top is from last weekend, Walk the White.
And right.
That was the finishing line, which is, it was near the needle, so it was the finishing straight.
Sure.
What I'm trying to do, and I, you know, this is obviously to keep Islanders primarily engaged, but also sort of some of the national media with the national stuff that I'm doing. But what I'm also trying to do, I think it's of value, hopefully, that because a lot of journos see the Twitter and the Instagram, I do try to present the island in the best possible light. And A, that's because I want to, because I love it.
Of course.
It's not my patch. But also, actually, we need to rebrand ourselves a little bit.
Yeah.
We are, you know... I want us to be seen to have cutting-edge technology, which we do, that we're going to have some of the fastest broadband in the world in the next few years, which we will. You know, that we are an amazing festival island, that we are the sunniest place in Britain. Mm. So, you know, I will be working with very much with Visit Isle of Wight and others to put, you know, to really make sure that people understand outside the island what a fabulous place the island is.
But I think that is what, I mean, I, in my own tiny way, I'm always banging on about the island's profile, and so many organisations do, as you say, Visit Isle of Wight and so on. But I mean, I've been banging on for a couple of years now that, I mean, we should be Silicon Island as opposed to Silicon Valley, because we have the technology and it can be our cutting edge, as you say, at this end. And there's so much to sell the island on.
There's a massive amount. And, you know, we are... What frustrates me, a couple of things frustrate me, is we undervalue ourselves, firstly, just generally.
As an island?
Because we don't actually understand quite how good the quality of life here is compared to everywhere else in the UK.
Mm.
And secondly, when it specifically comes to our scientific and artistic inheritance, we are probably, you know, mile for square mile, have contributed more to the public good, to the national good, in terms of the art produced here and the science produced here than any other bit of Britain. We are truly extraordinary. And what is really depresses me is for the last 50 years, we've almost willfully forgotten that.
Mm.
And we've developed an economy around cheap tourism and the wrong sort of development. And actually, and then we wonder why we're poor.
Mm.
Compared to the national average.
So, I mean, what we're talking about, again, is something I'm always banging on about myself, is the cultural strength and depth that we have on the island. But beyond that, as you say, the technology, the science, so the legacy...
Let me ask you a question.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, do you know... We've got some great people on the island. One of whom is Robin McGuinness, who's lived down in the Undercliff and is one of the great experts on coastal art in Britain, Victorian coastal art as well. Remarkable man. And he's helped develop a collection and has advised the council to buy, very cleverly, some good works of art.
Mm-hmm.
And do you know the most painted parts of Britain are for the coast, the most painted parts of the British coastline?
I'm going to say Freshwater Bay.
Well, nearly, but basically it's the Undercliff around Ventnor
okay.
and West Cornwall. Which part of Britain got Tate St. Ives? us or Cornwall?
Mm, yeah.
You know, where else? Who's got, you know, the Victoria and Albert Satellite Museum opened up in Dundee. Mm. Why Dundee? I don't know. Probably because they make marmalade. 80 million quid. You know, where would the most natural place for a satellite museum celebrating V&A, the Victoria and Albert Museum,
be? The Victorian Island, yeah.
Do you think it would be where Victoria and Albert actually lived, in Osborne House, considering how much spare space they have there? You know, where is the most natural partner for the Natural History Museum? Is it, could it be possibly Sandown Bay, because we have the Dinosaur Museum there, and a very large number of dinosaur bones from the Natural History Museum?
Can I push you just a bit on the art side there? Because I take your point on the technology, the science and the art, the legacy, the heritage, and the facilities that we have here, and all those things that underpin those points you've just made there. As far as Isle of Wight's arts organisations go, and I know this is a recent parliamentary speech of yours this month, that you are now expecting our Isle of Wight arts organisations to receive, I think, priority treatment from the Arts Council for England. What does that translate?
Good point. I'm writing a manifesto, and there's about 40 things in it that I'd like to see us doing over the next 20 years.
Wow.
This is not stuff that I can do, because one of the things that I found out is that MPs have a lot of influence, but they have a limited amount of actual power.
Mm.
So many things on the island are actually run by the council and not me.
Sure.
And I think there's a slight assumption that I can somehow click my fingers and we'll suddenly get 3 billion quid for a fixed link or some such nonsense. And so, you know, I have to, I'm sort of very much a case of trying to influence and prod others to do things. And that's what I'm trying to do. So when it comes to all the stuff that I want to see done, you know, I can influence it, but I can't actually necessarily own a lot of this stuff, but I want to make it happen and working with others.
So when
it comes to the Arts Council stuff, sorry, Andy,
No.
One of the things I wanted to do was actually just to get government to recognise that there are extra costs of being part of an island and to compensate that. And so in the arts, if we get recognised as a priority area, when arts groups put in for funding, they're slightly more likely to get it than before.
Okay.
So it's not about me getting more cash. It's about all our wonderful organisations, like Virgil at the Carisbrook Museum, like Paul at Key Arts, like these fabulous people down, the eccentric people, wonderful people who run Dimbola Lodge, you know, Dino Museum, the wonderful Ventnor Exchange and the Ventnor Fringe Festival that we have, which Jack and Mari organise, all these great people. So it just increases their likelihood of being able to successfully bid for grants. It's also important that the council, and this is really critical, it's also important that the council recognise the importance of culture, because so far we haven't. I mean, this new council is very good. Dave Stewart I like very much as a council leader, but we've been slightly blind to it. And actually, culture jobs, they last better in recessions.
When you
they
say we've
earn
been
more
blind
money.
To it, how would you illustrate that
well,
point?
Did we ever compete to get Tate Isle of Wight?
Oh, I see.
No.
Hmm.
Did we ever compete to get a satellite?
And why is that? Because you don't think we have the confidence?
We lack ambition.
Ambition.
For 50 years, we've lacked ambition.
And that, do you think, is really the what underpins this lack of development of this aspect of the island?
Yes. It underpins an awful lot.
And what apart, I mean, as you say, I mean, you can bring influence to bear and throw a light on these issues, but what can we do as an island? I mean, as you say, clearly the council have a large role to play in this, but what else is it that we as an island should be doing to raise the bar on this?
Lots of basic stuff, and that's probably not a simple art. I'm not sure I'm going to be able to give you a glib answer.
No.
The first thing is recognise what an awesome place the island is and how lucky we are to live here. Recognise the amazing strength of our community, that we are very community oriented. We all know each other, for better or worse. You know, that we are a little island with a reasonably small population, and that we have an extremely beautiful island that we need to protect and preserve, whilst, you know, making sure that we look after all of us and get some decent housing on the island. In our education system, it's recognising our history and our traditions and being absolutely proud of what we are. And then collectively, it's all the people who have influence, be it the great and good on the island, or the Royal Yacht Squadron, or the council, or the Chamber of Commerce, or people with a bit of money, or myself as the Member of Parliament, rowing together and really battling for the island. You know, we have a similar economy to Cornwall. Cornwall has had tens, if not hundreds of millions of pounds of government and EU grants thrown at us. At it, what have we got? Diddly squat.
Mm.
I mean, really, nothing. And we're like Cornwall, but better and nearer to London, as far as I'm concerned.
So if you're highlighting Cornwall as a comparison...
Well, it's similar.
It's similar in many respects, in headline points. I understand your point there, but I mean... Is it because of a lack of joined-up thinking, if you like?
Or? Yeah, we had
Are we complacent?
The council were arguing with the MP, and then the council were a bit rubbish under the independent. Sorry, bit of politics there, but it's true. And then we just maybe lacked ambition a little bit. So it's a lot of things that just haven't functioned
and
properly.
And yet the drive and energy that there are so many people, you've just highlighted a handful, and of course the list could go on for an hour because we have so many extraordinary, talented and energetic
and
people.
And the thing about
how do we tap into that?
Again, the thing about the island is that there are, I mean, most people have a strong opinion about the island. You occasionally meet people on the island and say, I hate living here, I hate the island. So I think, well, okay, what are you doing here?
Yeah, exactly.
But for most of us, actually, we're very passionate about where we live. And you have that level of commitment and passion about our identity, which I think is very rare elsewhere. You have it a little bit in Devon, you have it in Cornwall, you know, you have it in bits of Scotland. Londoners are sometimes quite proud of, you know. But actually, there are very few places that have our identity. Have we translated that into a national brand? No. You know, we are now making awesome cheeses. The guys in Sandown, can't remember the bloke's name, I'll remember it in a second. It's Rachel, knows the guy well, I think. The lovely Briddlesford, Judith down at Briddlesford Farm, and what they're doing there with those cheeses, and the amazing yoghurt at Calbourne Classics, and all the tomatoes that are produced on the island.
And even the vineyard at Addiston.
Yeah, the vineyard. Yeah. The amazing garlic.
Garlic, you know, of course,
what they've done with the garlic farm. There's awesome stuff. And actually, you know, we really need to market ourselves better.
Because
you go into Marks and Sparks and you see Cornish. I want to see Isle of Wight. You want to see Isle of Wight cheddar. I want the Isle of brand the same chicness and kudos as other part, as the smartest bits of the United Kingdom. Because we are the sunniest place in England.
And I mean, we are recognised internationally, globally, for so many, not only the talent, but the local produce that you've highlighted there, Bob.
Well, the garlic, yeah. French spider.
I mean, exactly right. But I mean, we are also known, I mean, I think it's the Rough Guide, it's either Rough Guide or Lonely Planet. I mean, we have been called the best cycling venue in the world.
Well, one of them. Yeah, well, one of them. And that's why, and I absolutely agree with that, and it's great to have cyclists here. And that's why we need the West White Cycle Route.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that's one of the 40 things that we need to do. Mm. We need to link up Newport with Yarmouth, because if you ride the cycle route, it's pretty short. It goes from the old car park, the old railway car park in Freshwater, give or take, up to, what's that little road, when you just get past Yarmouth, and it ends. And we need to make that route, because that 12-mile route could be one of the most popular cycle routes in Britain.
Yeah, very much so.
Because it's such an amazing route.
This 40-point manifesto you're putting together, trying to draw all these elements into one place, and as you say, you can only use this to influence and to elaborate on all these fantastic elements that we have here, and we should be rightly proud of, and not just sort of proud in a static sense, but in a proactive sense,
absolutely,
in terms of marketing ourselves, not only nationally, but globally. And you used the word chic a little earlier, and I think
it could be fun, it's upmarket, it's quite cool, it's quite a little bit alternative, original, stylish, intelligent.
But isn't this a process, in as much as, I mean, the age-old sort of, the timeless chestnut, of course, has been that visitors to the island, regular visitors who do love the island, still subscribe to you get on the ferry, you turn your watch back 50 years. It's that kind of thing. We're still overcoming to an extent.
No, you see, but I think that's us talking ourselves down.
Do you?
Who had the greatest music festivals in the 1960s?
Absolutely.
Forgive me. Was it the Isle of Wight Festival, or was it the Doncaster Festival? Yeah. No, it was the Isle of Wight Festival. You know. Admittedly, they then passed an Act of Parliament to make sure it didn't happen again, but let's just not go there.
Yeah.
So, you know, we are Britain's Festival Island. How can you, you know, be a retirement home if you're Britain's Festival Island? So why don't we celebrate the fact that we're Britain's Festival Island? This comes back to the social media. That's why, as much as possible, because I know that lots of journos read my Instagram and read the Twitter, if I'm posting on the island and not, you know, talking about the other national stuff or parliamentary stuff specifically, I will be pushing these themes because we need to rebrand ourselves.
But isn't there a sort of mutually exclusive element of this, or an argument that could be presented that suggests that because of the demographic of the island, that we are perceived as a retirement island?
Well, not really, because if you look at our, I mean, it's lovely to get all the elderly folks here, so I'm certainly not going to be criticising.
No, we
do have to push back on our demographic. That's one of the issues with housing, which we'll no doubt come to in a little bit. But, you know, we don't, our demographics, our working age population is 5% lower than the national average.
Okay.
It's not actually that huge a difference. Our elderly folks, they're a little bit more than the national average, or a moderate amount more than the national average, but we're not up there with Eastbourne. You know, we're not a retirement home. And, you know, as I say, it's lovely to have people of all ages here, but when it comes to our housing, when it comes to education, when it comes to have higher education and a university campus on the island, we need to be really looking after our youngsters, say, have a future here. Or, you know, at the moment, if you want to make it, and if you want to do really well, the one thing you have to do is leave the Isle of Wight.
Absolutely right.
And that just pains me, because it's just bad.
Well, how do we tackle it?
Well, you get a you get fantastically good education. And this council, with our Hampshire officers who are now working for the Isle of Wight, are doing a great job. So Paul Brading is doing a great job. I pay tribute to the work that Chris Whitehouse did when he was education councillor. Brian Pope, Steve Crocker, all these people are doing cracking good work. All the head teachers, Duncan Mills, awesome bloke down in Sandown, in the Bay Primary. Yeah. I saw him on last Monday. And he's going to be, I think, doing great things with the Sandown Secondary School. You know, there are, and all the other head teachers, and a lot of good teachers on the island. You know, we're getting our education improved. I'm playing a very modest role in supporting that where possible. So I made very sure that I was one of the, you know, part of that team that went to the government. I think the first Tuesday after I was elected, I had my first meeting with the Department of Education, and I said to them, "You are keeping Sandown School open. You don't know it yet, but you are going to."
Right.
And they were planning to close it. They said, "No, we're closing it." And I said, "No, you're not, mate. You really ain't." And they didn't. And we persuaded them. And, you know, I was the one who provided the attitude. And I said, "No, you're not closing it. So don't think twice. You know, you can say that as often as you like. So really, but that place is staying open." But it wasn't me who then provided the brain power behind it.
You put your foot in the door and kept it open.
Oh, yeah. I stuck my foot in the door. There's no way I was taking my foot away. And there's no way the government was going to get away with closing that school. So, but then, you know, then Brian Pope makes a case. And Paul Brading makes a case. And Chris Whitehouse makes a case. And these are the experts. So what I do is I push the door open, or kick it open, watch my language here, when I have to, and then I allow all the people I'm working with to actually make that case. So I can't do any of this by myself, but the other people obviously need me to make that case.
I sense in some of the things, I mean, all the things you're saying, you know, the energy that you bring to the issues that you address, and there are many, and I hope we'll get the chance. I think we're only going to get time to scratch the surface, because there are so many issues and speeches and campaigns that you've been involved with just in the last 12 months, even in just in the past couple of months. But there seems to be a sense, correct me please if I'm wrong, of almost, not exasperation, but impatience about the island needs to just, you know, let's collectively pull our socks up and get on board with this. Is that fair?
Yes, absolutely. And what I'm doing in Parliament is, over the next year, and I can't do it all in a week, as I would, is make the case of why we need some extra support from government. And that's recognising the Solent. So in January, we had a debate on government on public service funding on the Isle of Wight. That's just the council stuff. And I made the point that if you look at academic studies into the Isle of Wight, it costs an extra £6.5 million to provide government services. So that's just the local council stuff. If you talk to the acute service, if you talk to the NHS Trust, St Mary's, you'll say that they will say it costs between £5 and £12 million.
Wow.
To provide those extra services. So bit by, and if you talk to the SEN people, the education guys, they will say there's a bit of extra funding there as well needed. So with all the stuff that I'm doing, I'm slowly trying to make the case to government, factual case, because that's all they're going to listen to, that if you want proper fair funding, you need to fund the island better.
So this is part of your campaign with the economic growth and prosperity headline to it.
Well, that was the debate last week. Now, just for your information, Andy, how that works is that you can't just demand a debate. You have to put into it. It's a bit of a lottery system.
Right.
And what I've done is I set up the all-party parliamentary group, which is basically all-party groups are literally, as they say on the tin, they're groups of parliamentarians who have shared interests, and it can be on Belize or Brazil or mental health or the NHS, whatever. I'm a member of quite a lot of them, and I set up one on UK islands. So when I put in for a debate on, let's say, Isle of Wight economy or Isle of Wight health service, I will ask all my fellow islanders, who are Scots Nats, who are Liberals, who are Labour, who are Tories, to put in also for debates, but general debates on the economy of the island, of UK islands, or the economy of, or, you know, the health service in Ireland. So it's just to increase our chances of getting the debate called, because if six of us are putting in for a debate,
you increase your chances.
Absolutely. If I'm lucky, I'll get a half an hour a debate, which is just on the Isle of Wight. But, you know, the fallback position is you then get a generic debate on healthcare in UK islands. And, of course, the only thing I'm going to talk about is the Isle of Wight.
So that does give you the opportunity to bring the Isle of Wight's issues to the sharp end, as it were.
Yeah.
I mean, I know that one of your quotes from that that recent debate was that the Isle of Wight is home to many unique industries, and you've already highlighted several. I mean, we could go on with the list because there are so many, and it's wonderful. But in terms of the sustainability, it requires, as you say, us to be outward-looking and inward-looking simultaneously, and I don't think we are there. I don't think we have that vision.
I'm going to be super confident here. We are going to get there. I have no doubt that we are going to get there in the next 5 to 10 years.
And really?
In 5 to 10 years, you're going to have people from The Guardian or The Telegraph writing up the Isle of Wight as the new cool new place to live. A, because we've got affordable property still. I know it's... Mm. Okay. It's all relative. And because of our lower earnings, for a lot of people, it isn't affordable. And that is a specific, absolute issue.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But when it comes to, I mean, our house prices compared to the New Forest, there's probably about 60% or 50%.
Certainly. Yeah.
That is one of the richest areas in Britain. And that property market reflects that when we aren't. Mm. So, you know, we're going to if we get our education right, and we're getting it right, thanks to this council, with, you know, great health, great education officers, and support from me, you know, absolutely where I can. We're getting the education right. We now need to sort out the sixth forms. We do need fewer sixth forms on the island. We have a ridiculous number. I mean, we have five sixth forms for 8 secondary schools. Mm. You know, when in fact, if you look at Hampshire, they've got 7 sixth forms for 70.
Does the whole county,
So to have that quality and in depth, we need to rejig our sixth form offer. Again, that's not something that I can do. It's something that the council's going to be doing, but clearly I will be supporting. Then at the same time, critically, is the development of Newport Harbour. Now we need a campus.
This regeneration is really high on the list of things to do, isn't it?
I'm so worried. You know, the worst case scenario would be if it was just more housing and more sort of not nice housing and low density housing, which just eats up lots of land. We need housing to pay for the development, but it's got to be compact and it's got to be urban. Mm. You know, we then need a campus. We also need a railway station, because I want to get money for a feasibility study to extend the railway or get the railway going between Ryde and Newport.
Oh, wow.
Now, that depends on, you know, the steam railway supporting, but the steam railway want to go into Ryde St John's, so there's a deal to be made there. Mm. We'll help get the steam railway into Ryde St John's, but can we run regular services between Ryde and Newport, extending the track after Wootton? It's 2.5 miles. You know,
as a heritage railway?
No. As a functioning railway.
Okay. Oh, right.
Yeah, as a proper functioning railway. I mean, the heritage line will use it, but so will the railway do it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it can be done. Maybe somebody will say no, maybe somebody will say it's too expensive. What I want is the feasibility into it.
Mm-hmm. And that's where you would have to start, obviously, with something. But does that come under the umbrella of the Newport regeneration, or is that a separate issue?
It's partly, but it's also partly transport. So the big transport projects... Okay, we've got the ferries, which will, and the fixed link. We'll park that for the moment, because I'm sure you'll come on to that.
But on the economies of the UK islands headline that you mentioned just a moment ago, and since you've just alluded to it in there, and obviously it's part of transport infrastructure and so on, am I right in assuming that you are looking for another investigation into the structuring of ferry links to the North Island, as I call it?
The position is that the government... I specifically raised this in the House of Commons a couple of months ago, and the government said that, you know, we would be sympathetic. That we have a transport board on the Isle of Wight, a new transport infrastructure board, which is very good, meets, I think, monthly a couple of times, Christopher Garner is a very smart and impressive individual who's leading it. He's also passionate about the island, and he comes from, you know, well-known Garnets, a well-known island family.
Yeah, absolutely, very much so.
I have been specifically asked not to do the hard cop routine whilst they're doing the good cop. I have told White Link and I've told Red Funnel that I will go for another inquiry into a duopoly unless they pay ball more.
Really?
Because especially with White Link, their debt levels have been... I mean, look, islanders pay for the debt levels every time we use the ferries. Mm. Now, the biggest cost for White Link is in terms of staff, and that's the same for Red Funnel, et cetera, et cetera. And then you've got fuel costs as well. So there are other costs, but their debt costs are high.
Mm.
They have White Link have just halved their debt, and it's down to something like 100 or 120 million. And that's an awful lot of money for a small company.
It's huge, isn't it? Does that reflect...
And it was nearly double. Why? And that Australian company that owned it, my God, if I had been MP while that company was trying to buy it, I would have had an opinion or two about whether they were the right people to own a public service.
But I mean, Would they not also claim that the considerable financial input into the infrastructure in terms of new
That's their profit.
That's
so they're not doing that out of charity.
No, the stuff they
do. I mean, look, I really welcome all the stuff that Redfern and Whitelink do and Hover Travel to support people. Mm. It's about £1 million a year for Whitelink. And their profits, the profits that Whitelink and Redfunnel make, I know less about Hover Travels, I don't want to misquote, don't want to be misquoted, they are very high for industry standard. They are very high. Mm. And so I want them to be more generous, I want them to be more considerate, I want them to feel like they have a public service obligation, even if technically they don't. Mm. Or we can push for a public service obligation that they pay for, or that, you know, restricts the levels of debt that they can have. So their corporate parent bodies can't just park lots of debt that islanders then have to pay every time we use a ferry.
Yeah.
Is that debt on these companies, or is it just the corporate debt that people want to park here because it makes sense to do so? Mm. Because then these companies declare no profit but are yet worth a small fortune despite the outrageous levels of debt that they have. I notice there is, I think, a new attitude. And I think Redfunnel, to their credit, have put on a half an hour service now on the Sunday as well as the Saturday.
Yep.
And they are saying we're happy about it. You know, our traffic is growing. They're not necessarily making any more money, but they're not hemorrhaging cash off the back of it. Now, I have said repeatedly to the ferry companies, rather than just maximizing the amount of money you're making at the moment, why don't you try to increase your market? Because they are still turning away people in summer and charging a small fortune for to getting tourists and islanders back to the island, which is pretty outrageous. So why don't they think, actually, the way to be really smart is to grow the market and increase the numbers of people who use the ferries regularly, especially mainlanders coming here, but also us going to the mainland. And that way they can make more money and be more and act more in the public service. So why don't they do that? And that's what I've said to them. And as long as Christopher Garnett, who is a man I trust and respect, and Dave Stewart at the council, likewise. As long as these people say to me, we are making progress, we want to, I will not then start doing the bad cop routine. But if there is no progress, then the ferry companies know there's a possibility of another inquiry into them.
Right, so that is kind of a, not a sword of Damocles, but it is certainly something they need to be bearing in mind. I'm going to have
But in general, just on that point, I really, really want them to do it voluntarily, because they will then, if they spend, you know, some more money, a few hundred grand more, making sure that young islanders and, you know, sportsmen and women can travel properly and, you know, get to the mainland for the events and all that sort of thing's important.
Yeah, of course, absolutely. And we're going to have to take a very, very short break now to pay the rent on this place, Bob, but we'll come back and talk more in just a couple of minutes. I'm talking to Bob Seeley, the Isle of Wight's Member of Parliament, here on the Lunchtime Social Debate on Vectis Radio, 104.6 FM across the island and online at vectisradio.com. I'm Andy Knight. We'll be back in just a second.
With the community at heart, this is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
The Wight Military and Heritage Museum in Northwood. The museum will excite your senses and immerse you in a world of human success over adversity. Call 01983-300037 for more details or to book your ride.
Livewire Electric Shop, for all your domestic appliance needs. Appliance sales, repairs, spare parts and TVs. There are 5 and 7 year warranties available on selected brands. Find us in Orchard Street, Newport, or call us on 01983 522 420. Livewire, your one-stop appliance shop.
Isle of Wight Food Bank provides emergency food and support to local people in crisis. Your support helps stop local people going hungry. For more information, ring the office on 01983 292 040 or check out isleofwightfoodbank.org.uk/.
It was a well-paying job, respectable, wearing a suit and tie every day. But I drank 24/7. Drank on the way to work, drank at work.
I never could come to terms with admitting that I had an alcohol problem or a pill problem.
I decided to get clean. And so I went to the Knockin' On program.
Not only did I handle my drug addiction, I completely knew how to live life.
Call Knockin' On today at 01435 512 460. 01435 512 460.
Devoted to the Isle of Wight, this is Vectis Radio, FM 104.6.
And we're back. It's 20 minutes to one, as I mentioned a moment ago. So it's still 20 minutes to one, as far as I'm concerned. You're listening to the Lunchtime Social Debate here on the Friday afternoon part of the mid-morning show with me, Andy Knight. And my special, very special guest in the studio is our Member of Parliament, the Isle of Wight's MP. It's Mr. Bob Seeley. Very good afternoon to you again,
Hello,
Bob.
Again, Andy. Hi.
Thank you very much for being here
my
again.
Pleasure.
This is fascinating stuff. Just moving on, if I may, to a completely different topic here,
yeah.
But one of your many responsibilities. And I can't believe how many, if you'll forgive the analogy, how many plates you managed to keep spinning in your parliamentary office. But you're a member of the Foreign Affairs Committee, I believe.
Yes.
And, of course, that is, well, there are so many elements to that, aren't there? I mean, with Russia and Syria and Yemen quite recently as well.
Yes.
How do you play a role in that, and what is the nature of your work in that committee?
The committee shadows the work of the Foreign Office, so
okay.
Pretty much whatever the Foreign Office does, we shadow. As a sort of critical friend, that's how these committees work.
Oh, okay.
I'm sort of having an hour-ing about whether I should do this, but I think it's because I'm the only member of the House of Commons to have worked on the recent ISIS campaign,
mm-hmm.
which was against that, if you remember, ISIS, that extremist group in the Middle East that overran parts of Syria and Iraq.
Mm-hmm.
And I've done academic work, and quite a lot of academic work, on the Russian Federation and unconventional war and new forms of war, etc.
Well, you were renowned for your academic work on that very topic, weren't you?
Thank you. So I did put myself forward for it, and rather surprisingly, I got it, which I didn't expect to do so after 7 months there. But I enjoy doing it, and if I can contribute something nationally, then I'll have to do so. Yeah, that... my priority is always going to be the island.
Yes, of course. Taken as read. Yeah.
But as an MP, you should have... I think it's worthwhile to have a national profile and a national... to make a contribution nationally as well. And actually, as far as I can see, it is not unuseful for the island, because it gives the island profile as... or the MP for the island speaking about other things.
Very much so, yeah, good
island.
Point.
So I think it is... potentially, if it's bad for the island, then I wouldn't do it. But I'm hoping it can be actually good for the island as well, because it gives me more of a profile. And the more of a profile you have, the more influence you can peddle around Westminster, to put it crudely.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's a positive trade-off in terms of what you do there. However, the actual role itself that you play in that committee, in the Foreign Affairs Committee, must be quite demanding, I suspect.
It's okay, actually. We meet once or twice a week, and there's the occasional trip abroad.
Mm.
But it's at the moment, I have to say, it's pretty doable.
Mm.
And I'm enjoying it. We have some big reports coming out, which I hope will, attract people's attention.
Mm.
And I'm also, there are six select committees that are doing work on the Russian, the problematic relations with the Russians, and I'm secretary to those six groups, so I try to help and advise them to achieve what they want to achieve out of it.
I think it might be worth reflecting just for a moment here. I mentioned or alluded a moment ago to your expertise academically in that field. Could you just expand on that, just so people understand that you do have considerable knowledge and depth on that?
Well, that's kind. I hope that's true. I lived in the Soviet Union, and then the Russian, and then Ukraine, and travelled around the Russian Federation and the many states of the former Soviet Union a long time ago now, between 90 and 94.
Mm.
And I wrote a book on the wars in the Caucasus afterwards, and I've done a reasonable amount of academic work on all this. I've got my definition of... one of the bizarre things is that we don't know, with the new Russian threat, we don't really know what we're fighting, because if you talk to whoever you talk to, they will come up with a different opinion of what we're fighting. And so I've put together a definition of contemporary Russian warfare to help us come to understand the problem, because until you understand the problem, you can't really put those countermeasures in place that you need to. So that's going to be coming out soon, and then there's another report coming out soon as well. So I do academic, sort of peer-reviewed academic research as well, but very much in my spare time.
Mm.
And a lot of this stuff is to aid the national debate where I think it needs to be aided, and where I think I can play a useful role in doing that.
Mm, fascinating stuff. Well, we wish you well with that, and
thank
look forward
you.
To the publication of that. Sounds fascinating. Now, if we come back to the island, because I know that while we have listeners not only clearly, obviously, across the island on our FM airwaves, but online across not only the country, but also around the world, and there are a lot of people listening here and there, but they are listening because of their links to the island one way or the other. So I'd like to come back and focus, if I may, in the last, 10 or 15 minutes, as time is just whizzing by here. And another of the campaigns that you associated with was Protecting Our Unique Island.
And a
quote, I think I'm correct in saying that you said, we must have an island plan that serves the island, not developers.
Yeah.
Can you expand on that a little bit? Because, I mean, without development there, some people will say, well, you know, we're going to atrophy if we...
Yeah, you're absolutely right. But the problem is that the housing system doesn't work for... I don't think it really works for anybody at the moment, the way the housing
is. On the island in particular?
No, just, well, nationally. I think the system's broken. But on the island, it is particularly bad. Do you know how many affordable homes have been built in the last 3 years?
Not a clue.
Do you want to guess?
I'm going to guess at 25,000.
Under 100.
No.
Affordable homes on the Isle of Wight? And affordable, the definition of affordable is 80% of market rate, so it's not even affordable.
Under 100, you say?
Yeah, 18 have been built this year, 35 the year before, and 34 the year before that.
And yet with the developments...
That's on the Isle of Wight.
Yeah, but with the developments that are going on, and there is, you know...
There is more coming...
A caveat for all developments.
There is, the council will say rightly that there's more coming on stream, but we've built under 100 affordable homes in the last 3 years.
Well, I mean,
and at the same time, we are giving up green fields for developers to build the wrong sort of housing. If you talk to housing associations, what we need on the Isle of Wight is 1 and 2 bedroom housing for old folks and young folks, for starter homes, for key workers.
Sure.
We are seen to be part of a quote southeast market by the big developers. So they develop 3 and 4 bedroom homes on greenfield sites because that's where they maximize the amount of money they make, and then we import old folks retiring and we export our young people because they've got nowhere to live. This is immoral. It's just gross, and I hate it. So what I want to do is to have pretty much ban brownfield development. And what I want to do is rejig the housing market. Well, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this or succeed, but I've told the government that their current targets for the Isle of Wight are unacceptable.
Is this because of our inclusion in their sort of strategy for the southeast, and because we're linked in with them?
It's because we are unique, and the fact is we're not treated as that.
And this applies. They don't respect that.
No, they don't, because they don't listen, or they've never had a reason to listen in the past. But if I sort of kick hard enough, hopefully they'll start listening. It's not just us. You know, national parks, A, O, and B areas, unique communities in Britain. You know, we suffer. Because developers want to tempt people here because of quality of life, but they're not building for youngsters. There are grants and building programs that can reverse that. The council can prioritize land that it has for community development. So there are ways around this. And one of my priorities for this year is to finalize a housing strategy. I mean, again, this is council-owned, so the council need to do the work. In my county press column today, I'm pretty much asking them to do the work, and I will do whatever I can to support them. There is an opt-out. If you read the small print of the housing system, the way it works, and the new plans, you can have an opt-out, or you can have an exceptional circumstances case made.
Really?
So the first thing we need to do is say we are an exceptional circumstance because A, we're an island, B, we have limited infrastructure, you're never going to get many dual carriageways on the Isle of Wight because the government will never invest the money because the population is too small. And if the population triples, bang goes our quality of life. So they need to be serious about how they treat us. What we need to do is use our public spaces better. A friend of mine developed, great bloke called Ian, developed little, really nice properties above shops in Newport. The grants, the government grants for doing that, have dried up. So everything is geared towards giving wretched developers greenfield sites to build 3 and 4 bedroom housing, which is not the priority in the Isle of Wight, which serves their purpose, which undermines our tourism economy because we just get more urban sprawl. Especially around Rye. If you talk to fantastic councillors like Michael Lilly, and what a shame he's had to leave the Green Party, I hope he goes back, and I really hope he leads the Green Party on the Isle of Wight, because we need decent representatives rather than just people who wave placards. And he does fantastic work up there, and you know, his residents are fed up, and lots of people around Rye are fed up, because so much of the development is urban sprawl now around Rye, penny feathers, and exercise in a truly awful development. What we need to do is say no to the government's 620 homes, because none of it's affordable. Well, 10%, and even that never gets built. What we need to do is say no to the 620, say we'll build 300 a year, and that will include 100 buyback, and I'll explain that scheme in a second. So we're building between 200 and 300 new homes. We're going to do so in towns. You know, we're going to do this above shops.
And on brownfield, you know, rather than greenfield.
And on brownfield, which we don't, admittedly don't have much of.
No, no.
But you look at the centre of Newport. What is Marks and Sparks in building terms? It's a bungalow.
Mm.
You have a huge bungalow in the middle of Newport. Likewise with Morrison's.
Mm.
If that was, you know, London, you'd have two stories of housing on top of that.
Mm.
Now, why on earth aren't we using our public space better?
Interesting point. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, we have got to register. The one thing I need to do is write next week to the council, waving at Rachel in the hope that she will remind me of this a bit later, is that we need to work out how many empty homes are on the Isle of Wight.
Mm.
And then we need the council to say to these landowners, either do something with those homes or we'll force you to sell them.
Yes, well, I was going to say compulsory purchase in terms of developing the
brownfield. Wish we'd use it much more. And the council, I mean, I like the council, so I think John and Dave will probably say, look, it costs 10 grand for us to do that because it's very expensive to take people to court. Okay, so I will go and ask in the housing bill that actually if councils are acting for the public good, they should be funded by central government. So, you know,
really?
Well, it's an idea. Well, I'll try it. I'll do anything that will work. And, you know, and the one thing I can do is try to change the law because that's, you know, that's the thing that Parliament therefore, to make law.
Exactly. Sure,
so,
sure.
So I need to be able to do that so that we give councils, that we make it much easier for councils to make sure that people use their property properly.
Mm.
But really, that's why. So when I say I'm against developers, I'm not against housing. We need housing. But let me play devil's advocate, Andy.
Mm.
For you or all the people listening to this, what would they prefer? That we build 600 homes a year, bulldozing greenfield sites, not for islanders, but for developers to make money for people moving here, or would we prefer building 200 to 300 homes a year, 90% of which are for young islanders or old islanders? So elderly, special homes for the elderly, for key worker homes, for starter homes, for social housing for all the people on the housing list, and we build 10 times more of genuinely affordable homes. But half the, you know, the overall numbers, and we protect our green fields, and we protect our beauty, and we protect the tourism and visitor economy.
Mm.
It's a no-brainer, yeah?
Well, that was going to be my answer to your question. I mean, it's clearly a no-brainer.
Okay, well, that's what we need to do, and that's what I'm trying to get our friends in the council to do, and I need to work with them. And, you know, we're going to be really aggressive about it. And if we get turned down by the housing inspector, the planning inspector, I will go to the government and say, you know, you need to support me on this, and if you want me to support you on the things that you want to do.
Mm.
Because I'm not going to see, in the next 20 years, or the next 5, 10, 15 years, how long I get the pleasure of being a Member of Parliament, I'm damned if I'm going to see this island ruined.
Mm. Well, I mean, I think that I would simply send out a warning to those people in positions that you will be focusing on to stand by their bids, because clearly the passion and energy and drive that you bring to these campaigns and these policies is just self-evident, Bob. It really is. And I think that irrespective of politics, I think that islanders as a whole should feel that the future of the island is in very, very safe hands. And we wish you the very greatest of success with that. If I can move on to a couple of other of your recent speeches in Parliament just in the past couple of weeks, actually, Bob.
Yeah.
You mentioned education a moment ago, and I know that home education is an issue that you've addressed.
Yeah.
And that is something that I'm a retired teacher from here on the island, I have done teaching at various age levels around and across the island back in the day when it was a three-tier system, which, of course, it's now
a two-tier. Just on that, were you happy that it changed from a three-tier to a two-tier system?
My quick, without a considered and deliberated response would be no. I think that changing, I know we kind of fell in line with the general thinking of the day, but I think that for the benefit of the young people of the island, the three-tier system worked perfectly well for all sorts of reasons that I won't necessarily go into.
Okay.
But going to a two-tier system, I don't think serves the needs of our young people as well. That would be my view on that. But the home education issue is one that has clearly raised its head in your line of vision.
Yeah.
And your feeling on that is that you want parents of those children who are being young people are being home educated to take part in some kind of consultation. Is that right?
Well, to be honest, I'm Yes, but I mean, it's very much. I had a couple of meetings with home education folks who were very nice and good to talk to, and I think they were raising general concerns with me. It's quite a few months now. I'm just trying to remember what we actually agreed. I might have to check my notes, Andy, to be specific.
Sure.
But you know, I think they wanted to know that I was sympathetic to their cause, and absolutely, I am. And I think most of them seem to be, you know, really model parents as well. So I think it was a more general conversation than specifics. They wanted to know that I would be very supportive of their agenda. And, you know, within reason, I absolutely am. Clearly, if you're homeschooling, you know, we've got to make sure that the child's being well looked after, and that there are good reasons why that child is being homeschooled. And it's not because of any sort of physical, mental, or other types of abuse.
Yeah.
But that absolutely, you know, not the case with these wonderful parents who were just, you know, really good as parents and just wanted to, you know, ensure their own children's education, you know, for whatever circumstances they felt they needed to do so.
Absolutely.
So it's a more generalised conversation. Yeah, I'm absolutely sympathetic to
it. There will be a conversation to be had there with those people as part of the education plan for the island.
Yes, it will.
We're running very close to the edge of time here on the show. I cannot believe it, but I'm sure that my listeners would not forgive me if I didn't, this may well end up being the last topic we're able to cover, and I don't want to snooker you behind the green ball on this.
Yeah.
If there are other topics you want to bring up, Bob, but I would be considered remiss if I didn't ask you, where are you with Brexit?
I voted for Brexit, so I think we needed to leave the European Union. I think we're better off out, and I think time will absolutely show that to be the case.
Can I ask you just to expand very briefly on why you hold those views, that we would be better off out of the European Union?
Sovereignty, because I think we need to govern ourselves, and I think the European Union is doing an increasingly bad job of governing itself, and I think our membership of it was damaging to our democracy, damaging to parliamentary sovereignty, damaging to your powers as an individual subject or citizen in this country, and I think that will only get worse over time.
So do you think
I think the European Union is sadly not capable of reform.
And is it moving towards a United States of Europe in your
view?
Well,
they're trying to, but I mean, it's coming at a huge price because the euro is under increasing pressure and will one day may well fracture because it doesn't have, you don't have a common fiscal and monetary policy behind it. Just like with the old Soviet Union when that fell apart and you had a single currency and people could basically print money in different republics. And the euro, and I know that we weren't part of the euro, so I'm looking at the bigger picture of the European Union, not just at our bit of it. But the euro has come at a very, very high cost for people in Greece, for people in Spain, sure. For people in Portugal, for people in France, and for people in Italy, because you've got very, very high rates of unemployment and very, very high rates of youth unemployment. I mean, Greece is 48%.
Yeah, I know.
France is. Our youth unemployment levels are half that of France. So when people complain about not being part of the EU anymore, being part of the euro, and I'm saying, well, what exactly are you complaining about? Are you complaining about the double, quadruple levels of unemployment, the youth unemployment? You know?
If I can just go back to a comment you made a little earlier when we were discussing a different and an island-focused topic. You mentioned about the funding from the UK government that we can apply for and that we have received in some part, but not enough. But you also mentioned EU funding. Now, are we going to be adversely affected by not being an EU island?
No, we never had it in the first place.
Okay.
Didn't. And one of the reasons why, and it's daft, is because we were seen to be part of the South East, and therefore it was very difficult for us to ever get a deal from government. Because we were taken out of the southwest where we were about 15, 20 years ago and put in the southeast, God knows why.
Yeah,
and it's absolutely ridiculous. There is a future prosperity fund, and one of the things I will be doing, and I am doing already, is making it my case very strongly to the Treasury that despite the fact that we didn't get EU funds in the past, we should be treated as if we were getting those EU funds, and we should get a lot of money from the future prosperity fund.
Right, interesting.
So, and you know, that is yet another part of the island deal that we need over the next year to be working towards.
Okay. Bob, I can't believe it. Neither, I believe, can you. But the time has actually beaten us, and we are now coming up to the 1 o'clock news. All I can say is that it's been an absolute pleasure to meet you in person and a delight and fascinating to talk to you. Thank you so much for giving us your time today. And I will remind listeners that this lunchtime social debate, this very special lunchtime social debate, will be repeated this evening here on Vectis Radio on 104.6 FM across the island, and of course online at vectisradio.com. Between 10 and 11 o'clock this evening, you can hear this recording one more time, and the entire interview conversation I've had with Bob will be available on a podcast through our website at vectisradio.com in a matter of a few days, so you can listen to it at your leisure whenever you choose to, both at 10 o'clock tonight, hearing a replay of that, and then again on the podcast in the future. Can I just remind you all that Bob Seeley is on various social media platforms, and all of those can be accessed through Bob's website, if I can remind you of that. It's www.bobseeley.org.uk, and you can access all thank the information you. There. Just again, Bob, thank you
my
so
pleasure.
Much for your time.
Well, thank
today.
You. Thank you. I hope it was okay for people.
It was, well, it was fascinating, and you've been very, very, I think, candid in your remarks, and it's been really inspiring, I think, to thank hear you with the energy, the passion and the drive that you bring to the job, irrespective of whether people agree or disagree with your political opinions. Thank I you. Think they cannot deny that you are good for the Isle of Wight.
I will always be putting the island first, regardless of any particular opinion, political or otherwise.
Thank you, Bob.
Best for the island.
Thank you very much.